Welcome to the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast, your one-stop shop for television, movie, video games, comic books, book reviews, and more. Now, without further ado, here's Steven and Mike.
And I'll talk first today. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast. Boy, do we have a special one for you today. I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty pumped. So, hey, I'm your co-host, Stephen Boster, here with my illustrious troublemaking co-host, Mr. Michael Shanks. Mike, say hi, everybody.
Good morning to all you geeks in geekdom land.
Hey, we are pumped for today. So if you're joining us for the first time, thank you. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are two buds that have been friends since high school that we live in totally different states across the country. And we have been kept together in contact just on talking all things geekdom. And so we've had a blast. It's been great. Gosh, since high school.
Yep.
So that puts us at 30 some odd years.
Wait a minute. We're only 30 years old?
Oh, right. That's the illusion, along with the two geeks and one microphone.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big illusion there.
Yeah. Well, hey, we are so excited because today we have, pretty excited. I'm a little stumbled for words at the moment kind of a thing. But we have the author, Mr. John Jackson Miller with us today.
Woohoo! Yay! Welcome, John.
John, yeah, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
It is good to have you. So we are pumped. So what I'd like to do is Mike has got all kinds of questions prepared for you. Not really prepared.
Well, yeah.
All in his mind.
Right.
But first off, for those though who may not know who you are, which I would doubt in the geekdom world, but just in case, please help us understand and know Mr. John Jackson Miller just a little bit more.
I have basically been strip mining my childhood for a living for many years now. I have done comics. I have done novels. I have done stuff for role-playing games, Star Wars, Star Trek. Battlestar Galactica, Simpsons, nice. Mass Effect, Iron Man, Halo, Planet of the Apes, Conan. I've gotten to kind of, play in a lot of other people's sandboxes, here and there.
Cool.
Short stories, worked for magazines, was editor of the trade magazine for the comics industry, a comics retailer for many years. Still run a comics history website called Comicron, where I've got all the sales charts for the business going back to the 1960s.
Wow.
Keeping busy in various ways.
Nice. So what you're saying is you've never really had to grow up.
I lucked out and, got a job at age 25 at that magazine where I got to basically make my hobby into my job. Along the way I started freelance writing comics. So I was actually going to a job which was about comics and collectibles during the day and then coming home at night and moonlighting writing comics. I got to the point in 07, this was when Knights of the Old Republic, the comic series, was going. That I had so much work that we basically said, okay, yeah, I should just call the day job thing it quits and write full time. Although even now, I still kind of have those moonlighting habits. I do most of my best writing in the evening and at night. Oh. So
okay.
Interesting.
Not getting a. What I write in the morning is email.
$5. That's funny. So if someone wanted it, you know, obviously we can Google or Amazon, you know, look you up, a kind of a thing. But where are other places that people can find you on the web? Or if they want to see what your latest projects are, where would that be?
Okay. Just because I just mentioned it, the Comicron website is Comicron, C-O-M-I-C-H-R-O-N.com. Okay. I also have a Twitter for that and a Patreon. Specifically for that, again, under that name, and a Facebook page. Then for me on the writing side, farawaypress.com is my website where I have behind the scenes notes on most of what I've done, you know, chapter by chapter trivia on things.
Oh, neat.
Up to a certain point. I mean, the Kenobi page and the New Dawn page. Those are both like, you know, 20,000 word essays. They're just huge because they get into all the details. And when I remember something, I put it on the page. But I'm a few books behind at this point. I need to actually get some stuff up there. But that's farawaypress.com. Then on Twitter, I am JJM Faraway because John Jackson Miller will not fit in a handle. Then over on Facebook, John Jackson Miller, and also Instagram, I got that too, although I don't know why, because I never go anywhere where I can use my phone. So
I think we're dating ourselves, all of our age. We were like, what's Instagram?
I got it, but it's very much, you know, I've been trying to figure out what to do with it because, you know, I got it during the pandemic, and what it principally seems to be used for, at least in my little circle, is, you know, people taking pictures of things they see at conventions. So you have costumes and various other things. So it's haven't had a chance to put it through its paces yet.
Right. Nice. Same here. We're learning too.
Yeah, we just started a Twitter account yesterday, Stephen.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. For Two Geeks. That's
and
right.
We just recorded an episode. We were kind of making fun of ourselves and, you know, like, well, we're old guys, so we don't really know how to use Twitter.
Well, Twitter is great because if I'm not getting any writing done, I can at least, like, you know, compose a tweet and feel like I've published something. So
right on.
Nice.
Well, one of the things I think what Mike contacted you and really wanted to connect with you is because he is a big fan of your novel Kenobi.
Yes.
Loves it. And he has told me I need to read it. I'm a terrible reader. But I love comics and I love movies and I love audiobooks. So
well, we got an audiobook.
Yeah,
we got a great audiobook.
In fact, I was just re-listening to it. So
yeah, so it's on my Jonathan it's Davis. On my it's on my list because I have to wait for my Audible credit to come in.
Oh gosh.
So then
I can't help you with that.
So Mike, this is what kind of questions I know you've got some questions you want to ask him about it, so go for it.
Well, the thing I wanted to start off with, I think that your novel of Kenobi was one of the last ones before the Disney acquisition. Is that correct?
I actually had, to take it all the way back, and this is in those notes on that page on the website.
Okay.
It had actually started as a comic book. It started as a graphic novel.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Mm. In 2006, I was asked to pitch some possible Star Wars graphic novels for 2007, which would have been both Star Wars 30th anniversary and Dark Horse's 20th anniversary. And so I had written an original graphic novel called Ben, or I really plot for it. And most of what is in the novel, not all. I mean, there are some changes, which the essay gets into. A lot of what was in the novel was in that. It was kicked back to me to make some changes, and I made changes, and it got longer, and it was kicked back to me to make some changes. And by the third draft, it was 50 pages. This is just the plot. And we were convinced by that point that there was no way in the world it was ever going to fit into a graphic novel. And also, you know, if you read the book, it's long stretches of, not much going on. So because it's establishing life in the desert. So, there are artists that could pull that off, but it would also, you know, it would end up you know, being like an Italian Western, where it would be just, you know, lots of shots of desert and lizards and things. And, it would just have a kind of a weird feel to it. And what happened is two things happened to sort of move this over. One is that George Lucas started talking about the possibility, or at least the rumor started going around, the possibility that there would be a show, a live action TV series set during the dark times in between episode 3 and 4.
Right.
This rumor lasted a few weeks, I guess, but but that was enough to make us a little fearful that we would not be able to write something in this period.
Oh, okay,
and sure. Then the other thing that happened is my editor, Jeremy Barlow, transferred from editing Star Wars to running Indiana Jones. And he asked me to write the novelization or the graphic novelization of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And I had been begging him to let me do that, do whatever indie thing came next. And so I was, he said, you know, we're going to have to shelf something. Let's shelve the Ben Kenobi Western. And that is literally, I called it the Ben Kenobi Western in the pitch when I sent the email. Let's shelve that. And it was not until 2012 that, I was looking for something to do at Del Rey. We were discussing various projects. The pitch for this book was literally on the floor of the hallway sitting on the floor of the hallway in the Orlando Convention Center during Star Wars. I'm going to do that a lot.
Oh, no, you can't cross them.
Hey, may the force live long and prosper. Okay. I mean, you know, that's what we do here.
You're going to have nerds everywhere freaking out, man.
No. That there is no conflict. The Orlando Convention Center, at least at the time, had no place to sit down. If you were looking for a place to, you know, gather and have a conversation or a meeting or something, we're literally on the floor as people are walking past in costume.
Somebody didn't think that out well.
I don't know why it was the way it was, but you know, having a convention where people are in armor in Orlando in August is already
right.
On the scale of not thought out. it's a good time. But anyway, what happened is I suggested something that was going to be heavy duty in continuity, and they said, okay, that's all right. What else you got? And I said, well, I've got this, you know, Ben thing. And it happened that they were looking for things that were going to refocus on the original series characters. And I do not know for a fact that the reason for that at the time was that anybody had told them that from, a perspective of, you know, Disney's going to want that because the Disney sale had not happened yet. The Disney sale happened at the end of October of that year, I think it was.
But now, do you think that they knew that Disney was going to purchase it point?
Well, no, Del Rey surely didn't.
Okay.
Whether or not anybody at Lucasfilm knew, you know, it, I don't know. I've always sort of suspected that somebody knew, when it's sort of filtered down that, you know, the direction should be less on, the peripheral properties and more focusing on the main cast. But either way, the result was that they picked it up and we announced it at, or they announced it at New York Comic Con in early October. And so I'm actually starting to work on the book right when the Disney buyout is announced. For a long period there's a year or so where, it's just still not clear what's going to happen.
Sure.
We go forward with our project and, Kenobi comes out in, at the end of August of 2013. And what happens is when we get around to, the spring of 2014 when I'm writing A New Dawn, which is the novel, which is the Rebels book, which is the Rebels prequel.
Right.
You know, at the time, I'm about two-thirds of the way through it. They have actually sent me the paperback cover of Kenobi, you know, a visual of it, and it looks like that without the Legends banner. And it's just something for me to look at, to see. And then there's sort of a hold the phone. We need you to come out to California. You and, as it would turn out, Timothy's on,
to do a
video, about, the fact that, you know, the difference between writing Kenobi and writing, New Dawn is New Dawn. I was working with the story group, the Lucasfilm story group. I talked to, Dave Filoni. I talked to everybody there about what was happening in Rebels. And, you know, there was another layer of sort of, both oversight and suggestions, that was in there. And what happened is they said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to say from here on out, beginning with your book, anything that's in a novel is in canon. Anything that's in comics is in canon. Anything that's in, you know, any, you know, spinoff.
So back up a second. So you're saying that they said, starting with your book, it is canon?
Well, remember beforehand, it was all what we call G canon on Wikipedia,
right?
Which is George Lucas's canon. No, I mean, it was, we're going to respect it, and things from it can feed back into the original, and some things did. But if George wants to do something else, George will do something else.
Okay, so Lucasfilms is still in control at this point. This doesn't have anything with Disney yet.
What happens as of spring 2014 is they know at that point that there's no way that I'm sure they know at that point that there's no way that they can make J.J. Abrams beholden to everything that's gone on in the New Jedi Order. All of the good story points are gone by then. You can't have an opening crawl in Episode 7 that says, Han and Leia had three kids, two are dead and one killed the other one. You can't. You can't. There would be a riot in the aisle. People would be throwing popcorn at the screen.
Not me.
And an asterisk there saying you need to go read 21 novels.
Right. Look, no. In my head, Heir to the Empire is the true sequel trilogy.
It's cool. It's cool if you can work it out.
Sure.
But I gotta say, you know, when I saw Solo, and I saw Darth Maul show up at the end, and there's kind of that moment there where the moviegoer is going, "What the heck?"
Okay, I gotta admit, I enjoy Solo. I think it's a good film. I love Darth Maul. He's one of my favorite characters. But when that came up, I looked at my wife and I go, where are we at in the timeline?
Yeah. Well, and you're looking at it, you're saying, never really before, moviegoers expected to go watch something else to understand something.
True.
Good call.
I'm not gonna downplay what we all do in the tie-in media, because obviously we're trying to make it as important as possible.
You want a paycheck too.
This is the sort of thing you kind of have to be careful with, and certainly you can't be planning to go make a billion-dollar movie, and basically put a lot of chains on a creator. That's doing that. So they did what they did, and the thinking was simply that, okay, as of New Dawn, everything going forward has been overseen by the story group, and so because it's been overseen by the story group, they've been sure to make they can see everything. They know everything, whether it's in, you know, whatever media. Right. You know, we didn't, you know, we didn't really have that to that level of precision. So, you know, we had, you know, so we have a, you know, we had at Lucasfilm at the time, you know, there's a great team that's coordinating all this stuff. And you had Leland Chi still as the, you know, keeper of the holocron. You know, still, you know, there were occasions where, you know, things would occasionally go this way or that. You know, I think I had a whole thing with Malik's name showing up in another medium, you know, in Knights of the Old Republic before I was ready to reveal the name. It's just a matter of, you know, coordinating all these various things. It was a great idea to, you know, streamline the process and, you know, put people at the table who, you know, can give you, you know, clues or hints or things that you can drop into a story that, you know, may not appear for 4 years or may not appear until something much later.
Right.
So it's a very clever idea. And, you know, it's something that in all other media, or rather all other franchises, you know, people are trying to figure out how do you get things to integrate better. You know, and even, you know, now, you know, when I'm doing novels like Star Trek Picard, the Rogue Elements book that I have coming out this August, you know, I worked with the co-creator of the TV series.
Okay.
So it's very much on the idea for the book. I'm sorry.
Is that Kurtzman? Who's the co-creator?
Kirsten Beyer is one of the co-creators of Picard.
Oh, the Picard series. Okay, got it. Yeah.
And actually, you know, she began in Star Trek as one of the novelists and still writes novels.
Okay.
And that's cool.
So she has sort of been there. She and another novelist by the name of Dayton Ward have kind of been the in-betweens on Star Trek to try to actually, you know, make things integrate closely. And we have had things pop up in the novels that then fed back into the shows.
Oh, neat. Okay.
You know, one of the Discovery main characters, her first name came from the novel, that the first Discovery novel.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Anyway, okay.
So, it's allergy season here in Wisconsin.
No problem.
But yeah, so what they decided at that point, to get all the way back to that original, is that they would declare everything that had come before as legends. It did not invalidate them. They might still be true. Legends are just like legends. They might have a little truth in them, a lot or none.
Right.
And you know, if they wave a wand over any part of it, you know, it can come back in. And certainly we were using all of the planets, the species, the corporations, the everything that we had established right there in New Dawn. There are several references to some things from Knights of the Old Republic, the comics. And you know, those are things you could probably find on my webpage for the book, you know, specific details. And you know, and we just sort of do that. You know, when I did the Canto Bite, novella,
I forgot you did that.
Yeah. When I did my novella for that, we brought in, the character of Mosep Benid, who was Jabba's lawyer that is in the Kenobi novel. And of course, before that, he had been the monkey looking Jabba that had appeared in the Marvel comics. He was kind of a long in joke that we'd been doing, and now he's back in the canon. So,
so is that pretty daunting to keep all of those strings of a tapestry? Continuity together, or is it
that's
how we want to bring them in, or
You know, you don't want to bring in anything that's going to close off any avenues.
Okay.
But you can kind of, you know, names of planets and things like that. As long as you don't say nobody has ever been to this planet before or nobody will ever come to this planet.
All right.
You don't do that. But yeah, the whole idea is to draw on this stuff sort of the way I kind of look at the Legends material is the same way that when the EU is kind of just beginning to gel, what did they do? They sent Timothy Zahn the West End role playing books.
Yep.
Okay.
Which is where a number of planets and other things come from.
They sent those to Kenneth Flint too, who wrote Heart of the Jedi, which I don't know if you know what's going on with Heart of the Jedi.
I've heard about that. It's a strange story. The whole notion though is that he used those role playing books almost like as they were role playing guides
right.
to creating your own campaign.
Your world.
Well, uh-huh. I kind of look at the legend stuff that same way, which is
okay.
These are role playing guides for the current writer to draw upon.
Okay,
gotcha.
It's just that when you mention something from Knights of the Old Republic, that does not automatically wave a wand and say all this old stuff
Darn.
Happened.
Right.
But you know, obviously it is more complicated. In some ways than what you would be able to do with something like Star Trek, where Star Trek, you've actually got time travel.
That's true.
Star Trek actually currently there is a trilogy coming out this fall. It follows, it's right after the Picard book. The trilogy that's coming out is designed to basically deal with the what they call the litverse, deal with the fact that basically everything after a certain point is now sort of in conflict with Picard. Because these Star Trek novels kept going after Nemesis. In my Star Trek novels, Riker is an admiral. By the later novels,
how many times does he crash his ship?
Not in mine.
He finally learned, huh?
He and Deanna have a child in the novels, which is not the same child we see in Picard. In the novels, Picard and Beverly had married and they had had a child, and obviously, that is. If that happened, that we didn't see that.
Not confusing at all.
So what they're doing is they're integrating that, and how they're going to integrate that, I don't know. But
intriguing.
It sounds intriguing. The anchor leg is being written by David Mack, who has written more Star Trek novels than anybody.
Gotcha.
And in fact, he kicked off kind of this current area of continuity. It's called the Destiny era of continuity. So that gets dealt with. Star Wars, we didn't have time travel and not really other dimensions or anything like that. So
right.
I think the decision was, let's not make this mechanistic. Let's make this more like James Bond.
Analogy!
I remember having discussions with people about this even before Disney made its decision. I said you could go the James Bond route, which is Skyfall. Skyfall acknowledges that the Daniel Craig James Bond had the Aston Martin DB5, and that it is the same car that was in Goldfinger.
I love some James Bond.
And so what happens is he either must have met Goldfinger at some point or just something happened. But that does not necessarily mean, that he was in, I just saw this movie last night that he was going golfing in Scotland in 1960, whatever it was.
Right.
As Sean Connery.
Yeah. It just sort of, it sort of, it's, you know, look, if you're in comics, none of this stuff phases you.
That's true.
That's
you know, I had everybody upset in 2014 when all this stuff came down, and I was like, guys, I come from comics. I got a whole building full of comics over here. maybe 10% of them are in continuity right now. None of my favorite Batman stories have ever been in continuity. They were always off to the side. They were always, you know, not part of the current timeline. So
Wait a minute. What's some of your favorite Batman stories then?
Well, I mean, you know, things like Gotham by Gaslight.
Okay. Yeah.
That's a great one.
Hey, they're going to do an animated.
Yeah, they're going to do it. They're doing everything. Dark Knight Returns, you know, that's continuity. You know, it's all somewhere.
See, I love Dark Knight Returns. That's one of my all-time favorite Batmans. I'm a huge Batman fan.
Oh, yeah.
The Killing Joke. I mean, that's questionable. Sometimes.
And again, these are all things that we can sort out. We can sort out
right,
the fans.
Yeah.
And people will figure out their headcanons regardless.
Yeah. Which is why I said in my head canon, Heir to the Empire is the true sequel trilogy.
But the upshot though is that you know the upshot is that you know to get way back to the beginning of this is that they you know that Legends or rather the copy of Kenobi that you have there. They did not release that book that way. They released it as it was the first new novel that when it got its reprint, it had Legends on the cover. It is not, however, the first Legends publication. The first Legends publication is the eighth printing of, I believe it's the eighth printing. Yes, it's the eighth of Lost Tribe of the Sith.
Oh, really? Which is another one of your novels.
Which is yours, yeah.
It's another one of mine, too. So, And I was just in Barnes & Noble yesterday for the first time in over a year. And, you know, one of the things I do when I go to the store is, you know, you do your ego check of the wall. But there's really a reason for doing it is I look at the section and I look and see what printings the books are. And I saw that most of the printings, at least of my books, leapt ahead many printings over the pandemic. So Kenobi had been on its 11th printing. Now it's on its 15th when I last saw it.
And it's a good book.
Lost Tribe had been on its 15th. Now it's on its 18th.
Oh, really? Wow.
And that's pretty darn good for a book that we didn't think anybody would buy. So that's but that's another story. And we thought nobody would buy it because everybody already had those stories for free,
right?
Oh, you're talking about the Lost Tribes. You're talking about the Lost Tribes ones.
Yeah, because weren't those like the first, like some of the first technically ebooks?
Well, they weren't the first ebooks, but they were as far as Lucas was concerned. Yeah,
right.
They were the first. What we did was.
Yeah, I didn't mean first ebook in history.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not even sure they were the first Lucas books. Yeah, original ebooks because there would have been stuff. There would have been short story. I certainly had short stories for Hyperspace.
Okay.
The web service, but. But no, what these were is they were the first ones that Del Rey was involved with.
Okay.
And it was because they were designed to promote the Fate of the Jedi novels. So that was a 9-book series. And in between each of the 9 books, we put out one of these novellas. And
their place. All right.
And so everybody had them, at least while they were still online. And then what happens is... you know, there's a clamor for when's the physical book coming out. And everyone was looking at each other and was like, physical book. and yeah, it turns out people actually love books. So we did put it out.
Yes.
We did put it out. And when we put it out, we decided, hey, well, let's also write a novella for it. Give me a big chunk. So a third of the book is new. And then I will actually go back and rewrite all the previous chapters to, you know, synchronize them better and improve them.
Oh,
and and then I ask, look, I've got a map of the universe, or I've got a map of the planet. Can we put that in? I did not know at the time that Shelley Shapiro, who was the editor of the Star Wars line at the time, I didn't know that she had been sort of the official map artist, the official cartographer for the Tolkien estate. So basically all of the latter day Middle Earth, publications, atlases, things that were done in those sort of those later books, they're by her hand. And so she was like, yeah, let's put the map in. I wish she had drawn my map. It's still a good map, but it's a computer generated thing. But it was great to have the map there because it gives it a very, Conan feel to it, which is what I was looking for.
Very cool. Very cool.
Neat. Well, I have to say, thank you for your perspective about legends. I had not heard it expressed that way.
Yeah.
And that's really, it's really insightful about, hey, it's not, it's not that it's pushed away or forgotten or, that kind of a thing. Yeah. But yet, it does add character to the whole universe.
And I'm still delve into legends.
Nobody says you can't.
Right. Exactly.
The books are still on the shelf.
Right. I read from both. I read from the new stuff. I read from legends. I read what I like. That's what it is. Yeah.
There's a lot of cases where, there are chances for things to come back. I mean, heck, Thrawn is back.
Yep.
That's
right. Right.
Okay. Well, since you brought that up, I want to know what your thoughts on the upcoming Kenobi series is. What are you looking forward to seeing in Kenobi? Are you expecting anything from novel?
What I've said is any new Kenobi is good, or any more Ben Kenobi is good. We'll see. I mean, I did in my book what I thought his life would look like.
Sure.
That can't be the only vision any more than, Batman's origin was the only vision of Batman's origin.
True.
These are ever expanding worlds, and people kind of go to these things to, hear the parables retold by a different teller.
I agree.
And you want to let people be able to do that. So people are surprised when they find out that I don't watch everything immediately that comes out.
What?
But I don't have time. One of the things is that a lot of stuff I have to watch is for research. So I'll be,
that makes sense.
I for the Picard novel, I would have had to have watched Picard all the way through to be able to do the novel, although it's set well before the series. I would have had to have watched the whole thing eventually to be able to do what I did. But it turns out I had already watched it all. But that's not always the case.
Right. And, sure. That makes sense. We only have so much time.
Yeah. I mean, and especially when it's just coming out weekly or whatever, and not in a batch, I am still catching up on, stuff that came out when I started moonlighting. So, I had to do interviews when I did the Battlestar Galactica 40th anniversary comic series I did, which won the big Dragon Award, which is for the Patreon subscribers. It's on my wall behind me. When I did that, I had to explain to people that, yeah, I only really watched like two episodes of the new series because it was when I was writing Iron Man. We had a new baby in the house, and it just, nobody was streaming then, and I could never figure out how to get the DVD recorder to work.
I remember those days.
And I just didn't have I just didn't have the mind space for one more thing. So I
gotcha.
It was on my list to catch it later. And the problem is, everything I want to catch later, I get, you know, and I think everybody who is in the streaming world is like this right now. They're attracted by the bright and shiny object, and it's become like the to read list of books by your table. Everything gets put off. I decided a couple of weeks ago, you know, I never saw all the Saturday Night Lives in the very beginning. I saw here and there. And so I'm working my way through those. And well, that's 45 years. So
don't worry. After you get past Mike Myers and Dana Carvey, you can just stop.
Some good stuff here and there. Then we get into realms where I actually was watching again. But also, you don't just want to watch the good episodes. You want to watch the disasters. You want to watch, how did this happen this way? because it's interesting stuff. Just you know historically. And that happens. You can make a decision like that. I'm going to start watching all the Love Boats or something like that. And there's your next 6 months.
Right.
Oh my gosh, you brought up Love Boat. I just saw a commercial. Apparently they're redoing Fantasy Island.
They are. And they've redone it before, and they've redone Love Boat before.
Oh really? I didn't know they redid Love Boat.
They redid Love Boat as a series on, I think, UPN in the late 90s with Robert Urich as the captain. And they did do an episode where the original cast members came back.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Neat.
Oh yeah. Bernie Capel is just a great guy. I met him at a convention. Had a long talk about. I didn't talk to him about Love Boat. I talked to him about the Beverly Hillbillies. So,
right on. Okay, this is somewhere I never thought we'd be going with this. Love Boat, Fantasy Island.
This is what you get when you book me.
Oh, no problem. This is hilarious.
I love it.
That's great. Oh, my wife's gonna love this when she listens to this part. She's gonna fantastic.
Johnny, if you had your druthers, like your dream project to do, what would that be? What would that look like?
Go ahead. Well, look. I mean, obviously, people are always rooting to do things that might yet happen, and so you don't want to spoil those. The things that will probably never happen. Will probably never happen for a reason, people always say, "What's the one license you'd love to do that you haven't?" It would be, for example, nobody has ever done a novel, a comic book, and anything based on the 1987 Max Headroom series.
I would so watch that.
Network 23, which of course was run by two Saturday Night Live cast members, because Network 23 was originally run by Grossberg, who was played by Charles Rocket, the guy that got fired from Saturday Night Live, the first person to get fired from Saturday Night Live for dropping an F-bomb.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And then he was replaced in that job by George Coe. And George Coe was an unofficial part of the original Saturday Night Live, not ready for primetime players. He did all the old guy parts in first season of Saturday Night Live. And so this is what I'm talking about. This all sort of networks in together at some point
into a mass. So now I know why you're researching Saturday Night Live. So you can do Max Headroom.
Well, no, not for that. But I mean, again, I have no idea where the rights are on that or whatever else. I'd love to write the Die Hard movie that fixes the previous Die Hard movie. I think there's a lot of things like that we'd all like to do, and it's just not going to happen. Yeah. So.
Well, you said you did the Crystal Skull. I'd like you to do something to fix the Crystal Skull.
Again, that was interesting. I mean, on the page, it was a different thing. And
really.
And there's good parts to it. There are good parts to it. It's just it's complicated bringing something back over that long of a gap.
Yeah.
And, you know, no, whatever happens now, it will be less of a gap.
True. True.
You know, it is what the creators of the movie more or less, you know, had in mind. So, you know, I can't argue with the vision.
Okay. Yeah. That's
I always thought it was interesting.
True.
There was the interview with Steven Spielberg, who was like, look, I don't want to do anything with aliens again, because I've already done all these other things. And he says, George was like, oh, no. These are interdimensional beings, kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's alien, that was, George.
It was funny. You know, they still get to do their vision. And, you know, there were parts of it that were a lot of fun. I'm interested with the new one, if they're going to face the same issues, the same. You remember how you were just saying about there was such a gap.
Well, you know, I mean, we're now looking at if he is aged forward in the same way, we're now up to the Watergate burglary. So, it could be Indiana Jones and the missing 18 and a half minutes. Or however many minutes that was. That's not my joke. That's somebody else's, but it's pretty good. Good.
Thanks for repeating it. I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. I like that. Oh, I'm a little disappointed it's not your joke, because now I want the John Jackson Miller version of it.
I have no idea where I'm sure I saw it on Twitter or something like that. But
that was good. That was good. So whoever came up with that joke, we give you kudos for it.
Yep.
That's great.
Hey, John, I also want to know what big projects do you have come up? You've alluded to a couple of things, but I want to make sure that people can support you. And I know we've already talked about your website and stuff, but what big projects do you have coming up?
All right. Things that are out now. The folks that do Star Wars Insider Magazine, that's Titan. They did a book called.
Ooh, that's a beautiful cover.
Well, yeah, it's actually the cover is from my story. For some reason, my name is not on the cover anywhere. but the story is I'm not bitter. the story is in there. These are all short stories that appeared in Star Wars Insider Magazine.
Oh, cool.
And so it says legends on there, but it's really not, because some of them are legends, some of them are not. Okay. One of them is the it's a short story that I wrote that is a prequel to another non-legends novel, but it is where it's a Darth Vader Emperor story, which also includes Rey Sloan from the New Dawn novel that I wrote. So that story is in there, and also 16 other stories, I think, from other authors. They're doing two of those, Legends Star Wars, the fiction collection, Star Wars Insider, the fiction collection.
Okay.
They're doing two of those that I'm aware of. I don't know that they have the rights to the really old run of stories that were in Insider, because I think that was on a different
publisher
I think Paizo was doing Insider for a while, and then somebody else had Insider before that. Might even have been Titan again. I can't remember.
Gotcha.
But basically, these are all the current Titan era novel or Titan era short stories. So that is currently out in hardcover. Then we've got in July 7th, a doorstop of a book is showing up. It is Star Wars Omnibus, Star Wars Legends Omnibus, The Old Republic, Volume 1. And this is everything I ever did for Knights of the Old Republic, including all the text pages, including the handbook. 1,344 pages.
Oh my Lord.
In hardcover with two different covers. It's oversized. One cover by Brian Ching, that's the mass market cover. The other one by Dustin Weaver, that is the comic shop cover. And those run. We'll run for $125 each, but will not stay there because you know, Marvel generally does not go back to press on those, and they end up getting pretty dear before too long. But I do have a thing on my website where you know, I am people who want to get on my wish list. I have a sort of a mailing list that if I have them in to sell, I can get them for them. And I am going to get a supply of them. So
cool.
Excuse me. So we'll I'll be mailing out a lot of books in July.
right.
So that comes out then. And then we have in August, as mentioned, Star Trek Picard Rogue Elements. You know, fun fact, Rogue Elements was a possible other name for the New Dawn novel. We made it New Dawn when we decided it was going to be the beginning of this new era.
Oh, okay.
Of fiction. But it was one of the, it was in the running anyway, and it fits this other novel much better. This is the story of the origin of Cristobal Rios, the captain of the La Serena. And again, if you have the video, you can actually see I have a nice La Serena here from Eagle Moss that is just out.
Nice.
And I get to explain, or I have gotten to explain, how he got the ship. And
now, wait a minute. This ship, it almost looks like Van Halen colors.
it does, and it should. I get into a lot of its origin and why it looks the way it does.
Oh, okay. All right.
And his origin and the origin of his crew, because he has a crew of holograms of himself. and that is a blast. I wrote it. I knew it was going to be a hardcover. It's my first Star Trek hardcover because they only started doing hardcovers again for Picard. And I said, look, I want to write a fun book because of the pandemic and everything else.
Yeah.
It ended up being the longest novel I've ever written. And
wow.
And I use every word. It is so much fun. I just can't wait for it to get out there. That comes out, I believe, August 17th. And I'm hopeful that by that point I'm at conventions again, being able to hustle these things.
Well, I'm starting to see concert tickets are going on sale again. So I would assume they're going to start announcing conventions.
I have a few that are green lit,
nice.
More or less, but they haven't been announced yet. So.
So are you coming to the St. Louis area?
You know, there's a strong chance I will. It's not. I have no idea what the dynamic is in Missouri. I know in Memphis we hate Nashville. So I have no idea what they're saying that I will. You know, I'm going to see if I can make Planet Comic Con in Kansas City means okay. anything to anybody in St. Louis. It's the other side of the state.
I'm from Kansas City. I was in Kansas City before I moved to Bozeman.
He was a traitor. He used to live in St. Louis.
Right.
I'm not really sure what's in Kansas. Rather, what's in St. Louis convention wise anymore? I've been to conventions in St. Louis, but not in years.
Well,
what do they got?
We were getting Comic Con, actually, the big Comic Con, the Wizard World. It was Wizard World Comic Con.
Wizard World.
And then we get a smaller Comic Con, but I don't know who runs that one. And I find it funny that they're both called Comic Con.
Well, yeah. That's a very complicated thing going back to San Diego actually still has the trademark on Comic Con.
Sure, right.
So it's who's using it officially and who's using it not?
I know the one is run by Wizard World.
And Wizard World has the rights to use the Comic Con name because they got those rights when they bought Chicago Comic Con.
Oh, okay.
Fascinating.
Because Chicago Comic Con actually had a because they started not long after San Diego, they actually had sort of a grandfathered, agreement that they could use the name.
Of course, I don't think the Wizard World is returning to St. Louis till 2022.
I think it's all, who knows?
Right. Right.
But yeah, these things are all very complicated. Whenever you see a convention that was called a Comic-Con changing its name, like FanX in Salt Lake City, I think that used to be Salt Lake Comic-Con. Okay. That's generally what you're seeing is
okay.
Somebody's moving because of, a trademark thing.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Interesting.
That's interesting behind the scenes look there.
Nice. I love those little tidbits. That's awesome.
All right. Now
I don't know that for sure, but I'm pretty sure that's why that changed.
All right. Sure. I want to go back to Kenobi for just a minute. And I know you said that you don't want to trample on somebody's vision and stuff, but if you were to get to see something out of your novel go into the film or into the TV series, I mean, what would that be?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of background that we showed. That certainly the Danner's claim would be cool. That's the outpost that he's visiting. That would be fun to see.
Okay.
I don't know. There's obviously many different ways to do it. My feeling was always he needs to stay on the planet and never leave because this is kind of what he's been sentenced to. This is his job.
That's the way you portray it in the novel. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know that you could lock anybody else to that kind of a thing. So I don't know.
Okay.
In my vision of it, my interpretation of it, just didn't make sense for him to be globetrotting around other places.
I got a feeling in the new series we might see a little bit of that, him actually going off the planet.
I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, what I always used to say is, Shawshank Redemption, it doesn't mean as much if Andy Dufresne is sneaking out every weekend to go to Boston.
Okay.
But there are so many other ways to tell a story. So we will see.
Sure. Of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and it's like you said earlier about someone else, a different storyteller coming into play and giving their vision and stuff. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you. So with Heart of the Jedi, Kenneth C. Flint's novel coming to light all of a sudden, I did get this. We wanted to get Kenneth on this podcast, but we haven't been able to get a hold of him. And somebody else managed to get him, and I was so jealous too. I was like, "Oh, are you kidding me? You found him!" But anyway, in that interview, Kenneth said that when he went to do Heart of the Jedi, like you said, the only reference he had was the gaming manuals,
the
role-playing game manuals. But one thing he was told, because he wrote in his novel something about the original idea was, he wrote something about the sand people, the Tusken Raiders, and their faces. He kind of revealed what they look like and such. And he was told that had to come out. He could not write anything about the Tusken Raiders and showing their faces. Now you kind of delve into that in your book, so I guess you weren't held to the same.
Well, no, I don't show their faces either.
Well, you talk about the bandages and
I mythologize why they wear the bandages.
Okay,
but I don't say what their faces.
So were you told that you could not reveal their faces?
We generally don't ever say, and this is not just Star Wars, but it's everywhere. We don't say what we're told not to do.
Okay.
Because that usually, somebody gets a hold of that and says, "Oh, well, they're planning on doing something with that."
True. True.
But no, in general, that's just not something I would have done.
Okay.
I don't. there's stuff that you don't explain. If it wasn't explained when it got to you, you don't explain it.
Well, and that's something Steven and I talked about previously. That the current Disney. They seem to be connecting every single little thing. And I said, I like and dislike that, I mean, as a super fan of Star Wars, you want to see all those connections, but at the same time, you want to leave some of them to your own imagination and such. I mean, that was part of the fun is when I was a kid, we had no idea what the Clone Wars was and that we all imagined that, So, and now we know exactly what the Clone Wars is.
Well, what the tie-in fiction has always done is it's filled in the blanks on the margins.
Sure.
And it's sort of painted, you know, background in. But even then, you don't want to actually, I've said before, when as a tip for tie-in writers, that how stories connect is not a story. The simple act of making these things hook up together is not enough. You've got to tell an interesting story at the same time. It's a bonus. Whatever it is, it's always a bonus.
It's a bonus. Right.
And if the story itself, if a story itself won't stand on its own, a bunch of connections are not going to help it.
Sure.
Whether you're doing something that's for a movie or a TV show or a novel or anything, the same rules apply.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So one more question about the novel, The Crate Dragon. Which, by the way, I would like the Settler's Call to come into the series. I think that would be cool. But the Crate Dragon that Obi-Wan kills, is that the skeleton that we see in
No.
Okay.
No, because where he is fighting it is in the Pillars.
Ah, okay.
And the Pillars is this big, it's this big cluster of outcroppings, and that ain't what you saw there. So, there are bits and pieces where you can say if you want to look at it, this is that thing there.
Gotcha.
That's not one of them.
That would have been a little too on the nose, right?
And actually, that's another reason people ought to go to the website, farawaypress.com, and go to the Kenobi page, because you can find out there that that was the last scene that was added to the book.
Oh, wow.
They wanted two things added to the book in the last draft. One was a fight scene, because originally Obi-Wan just saves a young Tusken from collapsing rock using the Force. And the feeling was that wasn't visual enough. And also, by all this time, with all the Settlers' Calls going off, somebody must have attracted an actual Crate Dragon.
That made
perfect sense. So I said, okay, let's put a Crate Dragon fight there. And then the other thing is they had wanted some kind of prologue, because in the original book we go 60 pages before we meet Obi-Wan, that is still the case if you chop the prologue off. I said, well, I was planning on doing a short story for Star Wars Insider or somebody else. I ended up doing a different short story for Kenobi for that, different prequel. But it was going to be a prequel story that was going to be set in a bar on Tatooine. And I just moved that there. And that made it work.
Cool. Okay.
So I got a couple of questions.
Sure.
So you remember how you were talking about, some of the authors get the role-playing game as part of their, kind of their background, their world building. But for the Old Republic, did you use those, or did you have say and went into the Old Republic part of the role-playing game?
Well, the Knights of the Old Republic expansion. Video games 1 and 2 had both come out when we did the Coder comics.
Okay.
I had that to refer to, and I had not actually finished the first game, and still have not. But there were people that had, video, they had put on YouTube the cutscenes and various other things. That was the order on that.
Okay.
Although when I did write, I co-wrote with Rodney Thompson, Sterling Hershey, and Abel Pena, the Knights of the Old Republic campaign guide for the role-playing game, I was writing the comics at the same time. And so I actually have clues in the role-playing game for stuff that was coming up in the comics.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
And those very much integrate.
That's cool.
Very cool.
I love that.
My favorite thing in terms of Easter eggs that got through is when my wife wrote the stats block for Griff, his possessions list. At the end of his list of things that he owns, the last thing was winning smile. And that got through. And so that's in the book.
That's awesome.
Very cool. Very cool.
That is great. That's fun. So just another quick question. You know, you've got all these projects that you're working on. How do you, as a writer, do you just do a chunk at a time, or you have to iron out, okay, here's my schedule, I'm working only on this, or is it just inspiration, or how does that work?
Well, they're just so different. I mean, the novels require any more. If I'm doing a novel, I need, you know, 4 or 5 months where I'm doing nothing else.
Okay.
Other than making sure I do it every single day.
Sure.
And, you know, I think during the pandemic, with this last novel, I actually set up a second office location somewhere else in the house, so I had different scenery, so it felt like I was going somewhere to write.
Okay.
That makes sense.
But I did it every single day. I did not miss one, and it's because if you don't, you cannot get to that number. You can't get to 130,000 words by cramming them all in. I've tried it. I was a journalist. I, you know, crash deadlines all the time, writing a lot in a hurry. You don't want to do it on a book that big. And so, novels, you're going to approach differently than comics. Comics are a target that is constantly moving because, you know, you'll be writing issue 5 and you'll have, lettered pages to check from issue 4 and artwork to check on issue 3 and, you know, revisions to make, on your plot for issue 6. And these things are, you know, always, you know, it's you know, more like a TV series. So,
So would you say it's more complicated to write for a comic than it is for a book?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Neat.
Well, it's more complicated, in terms of, you know, the steps along the way.
Sure. Okay.
But obviously, though, the novel, the worst part for me is that couple of months at the beginning where I have all these ideas and it's like, how are they ever going to fit?
Right. And,
I cannot imagine.
and Rogue Elements gelled pretty quickly. But even so, there were moments where I was like, this is a great idea, but does this belong in this book? And some did and some didn't. And the most complicated thing I ever did really was I did a trilogy called Prey, P-R-E-Y, for Star Trek, where the joke was pray that it's going to be on time because I did it for the 50th anniversary and the novels were going to come out monthly, September, October, November. And that's that's what they did. But it meant that I had to write all three at the same time. And I had that dynamic that's going on with the comics to a degree with the novels.
Those novels, yeah.
Because, you know, I had book one in one stage of proofreading, book two in another stage of proofreading while I'm writing book three. It was craziness. And it took, you know, the whole project was over a year and a half just to get to that point. Get the plot figured out because there are so many moving parts to it. In the audiobook, Robert Petkoff voices 150 or so different characters over the course of 36 hours. It hangs together, and it hangs together because I had all three books on my table at the same time. There are no continuity errors within that trilogy because I had all three books at once. I was actually able to plant character names from book three in book one because I had it. I still had it. It wasn't
gone.
And, you know, nobody who was an only child in book one suddenly had a brother in book three.
Disney could have taken some notes from that.
Well, no, it required doing it all at once. And I will never do that again. It's too much. Mm. It was a third of a million words. And it was brutal. So I took a year off after that.
Wow. 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 But how well did the book sell, though?
Things sell and they sell and they sell forever. I'll say that, they were definitely some of the best reviewed things I'd done at the time. And
there you go.
And a lot of people are still very fond of it. A Facebook thread came up about the trilogy a couple of days ago and I'm like, yeah,
we're good.
It was great. And really what's given these things, eternal life is the audiobooks. Because even though, the paperbacks might not necessarily still cycle on the shelves like they used to, you do get the audiobook in Audible forever.
Right.
I actually listened to a part of that audiobook yesterday while driving. It is just amazing the job that these actors do, doing the narration.
All right, now, are you on my Audible list right now?
Are you on site when they do the audiobooks? Are you called to be there?
No, but I do talk with the producers about pronunciations and intonation, how characters should act or sound rather. In that book in particular. I found a Klingon language teacher, somebody whose job was that, to help me to coin the Klingon words and phrases that we created for the book.
That's pretty cool.
Then he recorded a sort of a teaching, primer for the teaching him how to say these things.
Oh, wow.
So, I can read it sort of, Bortash beer, jablu dich rech, kahuch nech, revenge the dish best served cold. But the Klingon teacher would say, okay, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, you just massacred it. I think we did as good a job as I think could be expected to be done.
It sounded impressive to me.
You just have to have a lot of saliva going on.
Right.
and it's also attitude. It's also screaming.
Oh my god!
The trilogy is a major character in the trilogy. It's about what happened to the House of Krug, and Krug was
okay, for those he stepped away. He's going to go and he's going to show it to us.
Krug is, of course, Timothy. Krug is, of course, Christopher Lloyd's character.
Christopher
rather.
Lloyd.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd's character from Star Trek III. And for the people listening just on audio, I just showed the photo I've got of Christopher Lloyd and me with the books.
That's awesome. That's
great.
Because I said I was able to bring Krug back to life somehow. And he's like, what?
I love Christopher Lloyd. He's so cool.
It's amazing to me that these actors can do these voices. And of course, the Krug character is just so hard on the voice. Yeah, so I'm delighted with how that came out, and I think everybody ought to listen to it.
Nice.
Yeah. Yep. All right. It's on my wish list. I put it on my Audible wish list. It's on there now.
Well, you better have Kenobi on there too.
I do. It's already been on there. Right. That was next on my. That's next.
And I gotta say,
my credit comes in.
I don't know who did. I don't remember who did the audio version of Kenobi. But he does a really good imitation.
Jonathan Davis.
It's Jonathan Davis, and the hidden gem for Jonathan Davis fans. If you get the audiobook for Star Wars Canto Bite, story is the fourth of the novellas that's in there. It's called The Ride, and it's one of my favorite things I've ever done for Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah, it's because it's about the casino world, and it's about a card player that. a card player that gets in a jam. But he does the voices for all the characters, and it's just delightful. Because the audiobook has the Lucky Three. These are these three little green guys that you see in episode 8 that are wandering around. I think Warwick Davis plays one of them.
Oh, okay.
And they have unearthly luck, and they ruin the carefully constructed strategy that the main character is working on. And they have these cartoon voices that he does, that, and they're all different, and nice. I just love them. And it's that if you want to laugh for minutes, that's a great
okay.
That's also out there on Audible.
Well, I got to say, his Obi-Wan, I was very impressed with, because it almost sounded like Ewan McGregor. I really, really was impressed with it.
It was a great job.
Yeah, very, very,
very
good.
Cool.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we have gone over time. Gosh, John, thank you for your time. This was great. I lost track of time. I was just so enthralled in some of the stuff. Hey, thank you for the insights about being an author too.
Yeah.
I know we've got some, man, I would love to have you back to talk just about that.
Well, you know, we were discussing maybe doing some Battlestar stuff. And since John has done some writing for Battlestar, I would love to have him back to discuss Battlestar Galactica.
Well, go read the book Battlestar Galactica Counter-Strike. It's in your stores now.
Okay, Counter-Strike.
It's a graphic novel.
Now, is Counter-Strike, is that, would that be original Battlestar? Or
it's original Battlestar. Okay. I picked up at the end of the first season, just like it never ended.
Oh, cool. I mean, I'm a fan of both original BSG and, well, I don't even know what to call it. I guess second generation BSG then, because you can't really call it new. It's it's not new anymore. But I'm a fan of both series, so I like both of them. I think they did a really good job. Although I got my issues with the end of the second series.
Don't tell me, because I haven't finished it.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Hey, yeah, that's, yeah. Watch the second series, and then we'll discuss that one. And I want to see what your thoughts are on the end of it. Maybe you can explain it to me.
I can't do anything for a while.
Okay. All right.
I don't think that one's streaming. Well, actually, it is. I think it's on Peacock now.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Very cool. All right. Well, John, just a heartfelt thank you. Oh, man. I just appreciate your dedication just in your writing and all that what you do. Thank you so much. And this has just been a joy. This has been a treat. So
it's been a fantastic
time.
We had a great time with this. Thank you.
So one last shout out for you, though. The best website to go to is
farawaypress.com.
Awesome.
Farawaypress.com. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Please, everybody, please check that out. I've already looked a peeked at some of it because I was going through the omnibus thing to your link and stuff and to the thing. They're sold out, by the way. Your link.
That's it depends on what it is. The mass market version is not sold out yet. What they're doing is they're doing pre-orders. They're taking pre-orders for the comic shop version. If you haven't pre-ordered it now, you're not going to be able to get it probably. But the mass market version is the ones that Amazon. So just follow the Amazon links for those.
Okay.
And you ought to be able to get it.
Cool.
Perfect.
Cool.
Perfect. All right. Well, with that, again, thank you so much for being here. And Mike, do you want to sign us out for the day?
Yeah. Thank you, John. I appreciate this. It's been a great talk. Loved every minute of it.
Enjoyed it.
All right. And with that said, over and out, and may the force be with you. Thank you for joining us today on the Two Geeks and a Microphone podcast. Tune in next week when we will have more news and reviews. Until then,
may the force be with you.